Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan De Burke Butler has joined us for Around the World. Jonathan, how are you today?
Tom, how are you keeping?
On to our first story. So you're taking us to East Timor.
East Timor, or Timor-Leste, as they like to call it now. A very small place on the island of Timor, and West Timor is owned by Indonesia. Now, Indonesia used to own East Timor, right? So East Timor is one of the newest countries in the world. It got its independence in 2002. It's very small, only 1.3 million people live on it. And most of them are Catholic. 98% of them are Catholic because of Portuguese heritage and that kind of thing. So anyway, why am I talking about it? It's because the Pope is going there. He's doing a visit in the neighbourhood, Indonesia, Singapore, a few other places. And he's due in East Timor on the 9th of September. And when he's there, he's going to be saying a mass, as he would normally do, right? We all remember the Pope John Paul in the Phoenix Park and
1979.
Everything like that. And didn't Francis himself only come over here recently enough, as far as I know.
Wasn't quite as big a gig as 79, though. 79 would have been, I think, more comparable, because they're obviously quite a Catholic country.
Yes.
And 79, we were much more so. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And they're expecting about 700,000 people at this. Now, given the population, the whole place is 1.3 million. That could be a good day for robbers.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah.
But you'd have to say that that's nearly a full attendance. The people who can't possibly make it are those who have to stay home, for some have to work. But
it's
incredible.
A pretty decent crowd.
It's incredible.
It'd be, you know, Donald Trump would be proud of it, that's for sure.
He would.
So anyway, in order to cater for these 700,000 people, they are clearing houses. So this is the controversial part, right? Now, 11 families are being moved from an area near the capital, Dili. Okay, now the area itself is known as Tasitolu. It's a kind of a marshy wetland just outside the capital. And over the last decade, last 10 or 20 years, lots of people have been moving to this area from rural parts of the country to be close to the capital to get jobs, all right, as happens in many places. And they've put together little shacks in these places and they've made a life for themselves.
So this is like a favela, really, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah. It is a bit, all right. And the government, indeed, are saying, look, you guys, you shouldn't be here. This is government land. So we're kicking you out.
Right.
Now, as I said, 11 families will be affected, roughly 90 people. Now, there's a few things about this. So the government have given them a bit of compensation, between $7,000 and $10,000, or the equivalent thereof, right? Spokespeople for the families are saying that's not enough.
Yeah.
The government are pointing out they shouldn't have been there in the first place. It's government land and they need the space in order to cater for the crowds that are going to come along to this mass. So some people aren't particularly happy about it, let alone the families who are being affected. And, you know, that it's part of this controversial visit. I mean, so far they've spent $18 million for this three-day visit.
Okay, so $18 million, and they're spending about, say, $10,000 each for these families they're moving on. So about, what's that, about 90 grand or something, is it? Or
I learned the other day, never do maths on live on air. Yeah. Somebody told me that.
It seems like a small amount.
It does.
By comparison to a big amount.
It does.
Right.
But when you consider that there is... So not everybody's happy about the amount of money that's being spent either, right? They're spending £1 million on a new altar.
Yeah.
Now, that altar, to be devil's advocate here, maybe it might be a place where people can go and visit afterwards.
Yeah.
So it'll be
like,
you know, tourist destination or whatever it might be. So in years to come, that might be worth the investment. But the bigger controversy here is the fact that these families are being moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no doubt it's going to happen, and there'll be a large mass here on the on September 9th. But
well, as you say, not good to do maths on air live at any point, but it seems to me that a little bit more money in the direction of those being moved.
Oh, definitely.
And you'd have a happy result. And, you know, it's a big deal. It's the first time the Pope's been in East Timor since John Paul II was there in 89. So, you know, it's a big, big thing.
Yeah, first time since independence,
and
actually.
And independence and all that kind of stuff, put them on the map and everything else. So, poor old Japan. And the saddest headline of the day.
Yeah, it definitely is. Japan has big problems with its aging population, right? There's not enough people there to pay for the amount of people that have retired. Of course, they have they live the longest in the world. There's a lot of people over 100 there. So it's a major problem. And they often come up, the Japanese authorities and government often come up with campaigns, or they issue reports around this to try and highlight it within the country, to try and get people to do more, as in reproduce, for example. So in this instance, the National Police Agency has put together a report for the first half of 2024, and they've found that 37,227 people living alone were found dead at home in the first half of this year. Okay?
Yep.
That's a staggering amount.
Staggering.
Okay? 70% of those were over 70 years of age. Okay? And nearly 4,000 bodies were discovered more than a month after death. 130 were discovered a year after, or at least a year after.
Staggering.
I think those last figures there about the fact that the bodies, it took so long to discover the bodies, is the thing that stands out to me.
It really
the
is.
Most. The levels of loneliness.
Yeah.
That these people are going through here, and the fact that they're dying alone is very sad.
The sheer numbers, too. I mean, occasionally we read stories in Ireland where somebody's remains will be found.
That's true.
It'll be front page news, and we'll talk about how such a thing could happen. To have, did you say 4,000 in 6 months?
Yeah, so there was nearly 4,000 bodies were discovered more than a month after their death. Yeah. So that could be anything between a month and a year.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a staggering amount, yeah.
Wow. You have to ask what's going on in Japan, don't you? Because it seems to be at the centre of so many of these stories.
Yeah.
Declining birth rates, people living alone, constant stories of sexual desire and activity. It's like it's a country that doesn't want to be here anymore. Or something.
In many ways, yeah. There was a weird story we covered, I think it might have been a year, maybe 2 years ago at this stage, where they have the oldest prison population in the world, just by dint of the fact that there's so many of them who are over 65 and because they live so long. It's amazing. But as I said, they have tried, you know, to bring in policies to encourage people to have more children. But if you think about how expensive it is there and the size of apartments. Now, I might just be focusing too much on Tokyo, but the size of the cost of real estate, the size of it.
Yeah.
And you think that the same sort of things are happening here, that people have to factor that in. You know, the price of having children is now a major factor in the Western world, full stop.
Yeah.
So this is coming down the tracks in lots of places, I think.
Number of elderly citizens living alone expected to reach around 10 million by 2015.
Out of a population of 125 million. Yeah. So that's the overall number of single person households.
Nearly 10%.
Yeah.
And the overall number of single person households estimated to go to 23 million. That's a fifth of the population.
Yeah.
My God. It's not alone though. Sure, it's not. It's other countries, China, South Korea.
Yeah, I think China, the population fell for the first time since 1961 in 2022. So that
is a little bit of that story also, that it can be allowed to happen, that there isn't someone checking in on people, there isn't a neighbour noticing something awry.
That must be part of it as well.
It has to
the loneliness side of it as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Over to Argentina and got a story that just brings back newspaper headlines from decades ago.
Yeah, do you remember these? This is slightly before my time.
Yeah.
Although I have an interesting story, if we have a minute.
Yeah, we do.
I've long been associated with Italy. I lived there for 8 years in Rome. And the first time I ever went there, I was 16, went to Florence. And I arrived on the day that this organization known as the Brigate Rosse, the Red Brigades, bombed the Uffizi in Florence. My mother wanted me to come straight back home.
God.
I didn't, thankfully, but it was quite a time to arrive for the first time in Italy. So that's a story related. This is a story related to the Brigate Rosse, or the Red Brigades, who, of course, were this Marxist guerrilla group that were in existence throughout the 1970s and 1980s. There was groups like that in Germany as well that were fairly famous. So this individual, Leonardo Bertolazzi, he was a member of this Red Brigade group, right? And he was responsible for the kidnapping of a wealthy engineer by the name of Pietro Costa. I think it happened somewhere up in the north. Now, what's significant about that kidnapping was that Pietro Costa was released, right? And they got a ransom of something like 1.5 billion lira, which was a lot of money at the time. And that money was used then to bankroll the kidnapping and the eventual murder of a former prime minister, Aldo Moro. Okay, which was a very famous incident.
Yeah, famous.
He was kept in captivity for 54 days and he was found in the back of a, I think it was a Renault or a Cinquecento, I'm not 100% sure.
Can you remember the photographs on the evening news?
I've seen them subsequently, all right. It was right in the centre of Rome. Used to live near it, a place called Piazza Mattei. There's a lovely little fountain of turtles and that's where he was left. It's called the Fontana delle Tartarughe. Okay, so that's where the body was left, and it absolutely shocked Italy. So this guy has been wanted since then, right? He wasn't directly connected to the killing of Aldo Moro, but the one that went before. He scarpered in the late 1970s, shortly after this, and he ended up in South America. And he was sentenced in absentia in Italy in the late 1970s for the role in that abduction, right? To 27 years in prison, okay, found guilty. He ended up in Chile, and then he moved to Argentina in 2002. And after entering the country, he was arrested, but he was later released and given refugee status, right?
Okay.
And he's lived there for years, okay?
Yeah.
Until December of 2023, when the new Argentinian PM came in, Javier Milei.
Yeah.
And he's a bit of a right winger, right? So he wouldn't be having any truck with Marxists any day of the week, right? So he decided, no more refugee status for you. You're no longer welcome here. And he was arrested last week and he's to be sent back to Italy, presumably to start his 27-year prison sentence, because he's already gone on trial.
Yes,
so he's 72 years of age, so he'll be 99 when he gets out again.
Yeah, he certainly got away with it for a long time,
didn't he?
My God. So in Namibia, they've stopped ships docking over their deadly cargo.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw news yesterday. I didn't get all of it, that the UK has stopped some parts from going to Israel, some munitions or something like that, because they're concerned about war crimes and the like. And Namibia did something similar. So they stopped a ship called the MV Catherine, which was coming from Vietnam and it was headed to Israel. And the authorities in Namibia discovered that it had, quote, explosive material destined for Israel. They're not happy about what's going on in Israel and Gaza at the moment. So they said to the ship, you're not welcome to dock here in their largest commercial port, which is called Walvis Bay. So they said, move on. We won't be having
any
of this.
There's more of that happening around the world, isn't
there? Seems to be. And certainly given Namibia is right beside South Africa and they would take the same line as South Africa, South Africa, the ICJ case. It's not surprising that they've taken this particular line.
Very good. The story from South Africa is stroke Nigeria is absolutely... This is a bit of a follow-up, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've mentioned
story,
this previously.
Indeed, this is a story that we're following up on from either last month or... I think it was early last month, involving a Miss South Africa contestant.
Yeah.
A woman by the name of Chidima Adesina. She's 23-year-old and she was in Miss South Africa and she was doing fine. Until it was discovered that her father was Nigerian, all right?
Yeah.
And people started giving her abuse online because they were saying, oh, she's not fully South African. She probably wasn't born here. It's all a scam. Now, she was born in South Africa. But strangely, Miss South Africa, the organisers of that, asked the authorities to launch an investigation into her mother because there were suspicions that she might have stolen the identity of a South African woman and that she might in fact be from Nigeria herself.
Okay.
So this meant that this 23-year-old model was effectively getting lots of abuse online and she pulled out of the contest, she said.
For the well-being of my family.
Yeah, that's what she said
Must
on her Instagram.
Heavy
account.
Advice. Heavy attacks. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was sheer abuse. So that was fine. She left it and the world had seemed to have forgotten about her until the organisers of Miss Universe Nigeria decided, why don't we get a bit of publicity for ourselves and do a nice thing here and invite this woman to be a contestant in our particular
contest.
Decent of them. Yeah, very nice indeed. And so she won.
She won
last year, yeah, and she's going to go ahead head to the Miss Universe competition in November, where she is fairly sure she is going to win. She's confident. So it'll be a story that she's able to bring to that, that's
for
sure.
Yeah, I read little bits about the story. I think she's going to be very successful and very popular.
She will be all right.
And say that name again, because you were good at it.
Chidima Adesina
is a name they will know soon enough.
Absolutely.
All around the world.
Absolutely, I think
I'm predicting
here. Yeah. So we'll have to follow up on that and see how she does in November. Yeah.
I'd say she'll follow us. I think that story will be on front pages very soon. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
What's coming up in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, a few things to look out for this week. So September the 7th, there are presidential elections in Algeria. September the 7th is also World Beard Day. Do you ever have a beard?
No, I wouldn't be able to grow a beard if my life depended on it. I've often said if something like the Arab world came to power here, yeah, and you needed to grow facial hair, you'd or go, I'd be in prison. I would.
Oh, you wouldn't be able to.
Wouldn't be able to.
Wasn't there a guy from ZZ Top? The two of them had a beard, and one of them couldn't grow a beard. Was that an urban myth?
That's what I heard. I don't know. I never heard that before. But
somebody will know.
They say it's a testosterone thing, isn't it? So I think that the downside is you can't grow a beard. The upside is I think your hair stays in longer. So I'm kind of happy to go with the hair staying longer, given a choice.
That's fair enough. Full growth or
hair staying. I'll go the hair 100%. Staying. That's all right. Thank you very much for that.
No worries,
World Beard Day is next, the 7th, is it?
Say that again. World Beard Day is the 7th. Yes,
and the final day of the Paralympics
is on the 8th of September.
Very good. Wonderful stuff.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.